The Adventures of Link? Don't you mean The Misadventures of Flink? Am I right? Oh, I guess that is what they called it. It's Amigos, everything Amiga. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Amigos. I'm John.
And I'm Aaron.
And today, Aaron, we're talking about The Misadventures of Flink.
Yes, sir.
Now, you know, Aaron, this game obviously is they name check the Zelda series. And I know that you're not the world's biggest Zelda fan out there, but you did like the old Zelda 2 a little bit.
Well,
tell
first
us,
of all,
Aaron.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Tell us, what did you like about Zelda 2 that you didn't like about the other Zelda games?
Well, to start out, I didn't draw any connection between Flink and Link. It never occurred to me one time.
That was the very first thing that popped in my mind.
I don't know if that's intentional or not. I don't know. But with all that said, the reason that early on I liked Zelda 2, just because it was something that I was more accustomed to. It was a side-scrolling, you know, platform shooter or whatever, you know. I mean, am I saying that it's a tremendous game? I don't really like the early Zeldas. I don't like any of them. Now, as they moved on to the N64, you know, and they became 3D, you know, those I got into a little bit more. I did play some of those. I mean, I didn't beat them or anything, but I played them because I could wrap my head around them a little bit more. But really what got me
in the past, you've lashed out against the whole gameplay concept of cutting the grass with your sword. What is it about that angers you so much?
You just cut me off when I was getting ready. That's exactly the point I was getting ready to make. You read my mind. Those early Zeldas, we just go around and just destroy. I hate games. And it's not just Zelda. I like Spider-Man on the Dreamcast. I love that game. Mm-hmm. But you're Spider-Man, okay? And you're going around, you're kicking boxes and barrels. And the same thing in the Dungeons & Dragons MMO. Like, you're a D&D guy. I play D&D. I don't go around crushing boxes and barrels everywhere I go and looting them. It's dumb. It's a stupid concept in gaming. I've never liked it. You can get away with doing it occasionally. You know, like in a Mario game, if you jump up and hit the question mark, it's okay. It's a mystery box. That's different. Yeah. You know, but just barrels and boxes and over and over and over for the entire game. It's just busy work for the poor geek that's playing the game. I just don't like it. I don't like hacking grass. I don't like any of that stuff. And so, yeah, that continues to this day. It's always something that's irritated me. And the first couple of Zeldas just do that in spades. I mean, I don't hate them. I kind of understand why people like them because that was what they knew as an early adventure D&D role-playing type game on the old NES or whatever. They had that stuff that I had the stuff on the PC which you're not particularly fond of a lot of, but just, you know. Yeah. So it's just, it's what you grew up with, I think, is a lot of it that, you know, that what
you
you're
know,
used
it's funny,
to.
We haven't really had a chance to break down the D&D MMO on Amigos. You play a lot of COH. You played a lot of EverQuest.
Yeah.
What was it about the D&D MMO that made you bounce out?
Well, I mean, it's changed a lot over the years, the Dungeons & Dragons MMO. Early on, I didn't find it that much fun. And it was really hard. And it wasn't like D&D and at all, in my opinion. I mean, the world was sort of like it. And after a while, they made it a little bit better, but then they started putting a lot of stuff where you had to pay extra, you know, extra when they got into that. When you go to the free to play model, but then you got to buy everything. They did that for a while. The last time I played it, it seemed better, you know. But I mean, to me, it's hard to replicate like the D&D feel in a video game. I mean, I was just talking to Pat the other night. Him and the boys in TSI were playing the original Neverwinter Nights, if you ever heard of that game, which was popular. It was an isometric attempt. And I remember buying that game, and I didn't like it either. It didn't do it for me, man. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know what I want, if you want the truth.
Well, you know, a lot of times when people talk about role-playing games, they talk about the three pillars. The three pillars are social interaction, exploration, and combat. And it seems like the computer role-playing games give you two of the three. They give you the exploration, they give you the combat, but they don't include that social interaction part. Is that what was sort of missing for you?
boy. When you play, when I play D&D, especially when I run it, I grew up in the old school. Tonight we're going to play Queen of the Demon Web Pits. Tonight we're going to play White Plume Mountain, the module. And we're going to, this will take us to the next 3 or 4 weeks if you survive. And so you'd play this entirely like encapsulated adventure. All right. And then you'd move on to the next one. It's not like when you and Brent were running it, that was a lot, those were quite a bit different than what this was. These were pre-made, prefab modules. And so in my mind, because they said when Neverwinter Nights came out, they're like, yeah, we're going to have modules that were based on the old modules. Like, oh, that'll be fun. Well, I never even saw any of that. Mm-hmm. And the rest of it just felt like every other game of the story. I mean, really, the one that came the closest was EverQuest. You know, because you're right, it had it all the, you know, but the combat was okay. Everything in it was okay, you know. It was okay. It's probably the closest I've came. But I also am lazy. I'm not a real deep guy when it comes to those stuff. And so I don't even want to loot. I don't want to craft. I don't want to do any of that stuff. If I get new armor, so I just want to put it on. I don't want to screw with it. Some people love that. I don't. I'm shallow, I guess. So when I say the D&D game wasn't for me, I'm not saying that the game's no good. I'm just saying that my special criteria are yet to be met, except for City of Heroes. The only game that's gotten it right for me was City of Heroes.
If we go back to those three pillars, if you were going to rank them, social interaction, exploration, and combat, how would you rank them?
Well, social interaction probably be at the bottom. And the reason is because I usually play with a set of guys and we're talking. That's different than it used to be. So social interaction would be like interacting with NPCs and stuff. That's not a huge deal. We usually buzz right through that stuff.
Okay.
Combat is pretty high on the list. And what was the other one?
Exploration.
Yeah, that's number two. I would say, and that's one of the reasons I like City of Heroes. I like watching guys fall over rails, crotch themselves, get stuck in walls, have their foot stuck in stuff, and you go over and laugh at them. You know, I want hilarity. You know, that tickles me.
I guess that's the little known fourth pillar of role playing, hilarity.
That's hilarity is a big part of it, and just joyousness. You know, I want to have a joyous time. Even in City of Heroes, there's a part of town for the villains to play. I never go there. It's too depressing. That's I've got problems. I don't know what's wrong with me, but I just like to go in there. When my gaming, I've got a very limited amount of time to do that stuff. I want it to be fun all the time with me laughing and having a good time. That's what I want. And then I want it to get in, get out.
Speaking of fun, laughing, and having a good time all the time, Aaron, let's talk about Flink.
That's the CD quality soundtrack of the Misadventures of Flink Boot. Pretty good jam there, I thought. I kind of like that. Since we just heard that, what did you think of the music in this? It's not often we play an Amiga game that's got nothing but the old Red Book audio. What'd you think?
Well, this is an interesting soundtrack.
Yeah.
Do you ever think about things and you wonder if what you know before influences how you think about things? Because
yes.
This is a soundtrack that really changes it up a lot. It seems like every 8 or 16 bars it acquires a new mood. And it really reminded me a lot of the music from Lionheart. But I don't know if it really did or not because of the Nyborg connection, as I'm sure we'll get into. Because, you know, Lionheart, one of the greatest things about Lionheart is the fact that as you move through the levels, the music changes several times throughout the level, which you hardly ever get in an Amiga game. This thing is like that on steroids. It's like every 20 or 30 seconds, you get an entirely new mood without really doing anything in this game.
Well, it's funny you should mention that because the same guy did the music in Lionheart.
Oh, okay.
Matthias Steinwitz. He did the music in this too. So we might as well go ahead and run down the particulars here before we get nitty gritty. This is the Misadventures of Flink, or some people just call it Flink. This is a rare CD32 exclusive boat. I mean, on the Amiga side, this was also released for the Genesis or Mega Drive and the Genesis CD and Mega Drive CD as well. And I will just up front to get it out of the way. The only difference between the Mega Drive and the Mega Drive CD version of this game is the audio. There is no other difference. That's been confirmed. I mean, I played the Mega Drive version of this and played the Sega CD version, and they are pretty much exactly the same except for the audio. But this is, you know, a lot of times they double dip on the Amiga with the CD32 and release it as a 1200 AGA release, but not this time around.
I mean, why would you not? But this, this is one of the few times that didn't happen.
Well, I think that's not the worst idea. So, again, this is a 1995 release. I've heard some people say this came out late in 94, and I've also read 95, so somewhere in that ballpark. This happened to come out right as the CD32 was dead. Whoops.
When would you release it when the CD32 was
no,
alive?
No, I mean, actually, we're not making them dead. Like, well, goodbye. Okay. We're out of here. This was published by Psygnosis. Psygnosis, of course. Do I need to go down to all their stuff just to name a few? Agony, Shadow of the Beast, the Armageddons, the Barbarians, Brian the Lion. I mean, a million things. They did a ton of stuff.
Did they do Barbarian? I had no idea.
Yeah, they published Barbarian. Okay. They published this. They didn't actually do the work on it. So this is an interesting collaboration here. This was created, as credited as being created by a fellow named Erwin Kloibhofer. Let's go with that. He worked on Lionheart, a game called Ghost Battle, and a game called Charlie. A lot of these guys are from the old Lionheart game.
But basically, this was the remnants of Thalion.
It was exactly
shortly after Lionheart, they ceased to exist.
Yeah,
they got the team back together one more time to do.
Well, actually, I think, come to think of it, I think every one of these guys did work on Lionheart. Now that I look at this, the design and the graphics on this were by the genius Hank Nyborg. What can be said about this guy?
People throw around the term genius a lot.
Yeah.
In this case, it's justified.
Yeah. I knew you, because if I'd called someone a genius that you thought sucked, I know you would have called me out on it.
Right. But I mean, he is a genius with the Pixel.
And
he
stylist.
Does things that you would not think is possible.
Yeah. He's stylistic. He's got his own. I mean, we'll get to that. But it's funny. His Amiga offerings, he didn't have a ton of them. He did, of course, Lionheart, first and foremost. He did Amber Moon, Amber Star. I didn't realize there's a game called Amber Moon Arcade. I'm not sure exactly what
you're
that name.
It's sort of like the Elvira games, you know.
Really?
You've got the RPG, and then you've got
so
the
you
arcade
don't know, though,
version.
He also worked on Charlie and Ghost Battle. And then we mentioned that the music fellow was Matthias. Hank also did the graphics. So he did the graphics. If you watch the end credits on this, he says he did the graphics. He did the programming. He did the level design for all the levels. He was the king dong of this game. I don't know exactly what the creator was responsible for. I think it said they listed in the credits. Like, I think he worked on the cheat engine, a couple other things. But
a lot of times the creator is like, hey, wouldn't it be cool if we had a game about this, like, apprentice wizard? And then Hank, by the way, you should stop trying to pronounce it Hank or whatever. Just
What's
call
his
him
name?
Hank.
It's Hank.
You can call him the hammer if you want.
Well, it's Hank. But I will say, Erwin was, they credited him right up front in the end credits. And they mentioned what, so he didn't just hey, let's do this. I mean, he was in there. He was in there, brother. You know.
In there.
This is a scrolling platform game in the tradition of, it really strikes me much more in the tradition of a console game than an Amiga game. And
well,
I think
it was a console game.
Right, but
CD32 was a console.
Right, right. I mean, you're right. I mean, you're right, because there was no Amiga port, so you're dead on. I'm so unused to that. And so I'm just going to say this. Think about all the platformers that we've played on this show. Like, tons of them, right?
Tons of them.
And so, what do we like? Okay, here's what we like. We like overworld maps. We like short levels. We like the feeling that you're getting somewhere. Mm-hmm. We like tight controls, and we like
good music.
Good music and sound effects.
Sound effects simultaneously.
Right? That's what we like. Okay.
Yeah.
This game's got all that stuff. Now, so you're right now you're thinking to yourself, hey, this could be an all-time classic. Yes, with a but. All right, we're just going to start off the show with this. I'm not going to screw around. This game is a beautiful game that ticks all the boxes, but it has one thing that people might not like. And I don't know where you fall in this. That's why I just want to start the discussion off with this. What did you think, Boat, of the pacing in Misadventures of Flink?
Well, the problem comes with the fact that this game does not control particularly well. Like you said, we like good controls. The game, because, and this is a conscious decision made by the coder, in most games, when you move forward, when you press the joystick or the control pad to the right, your character sets off at a pace that he will maintain until you hit the run button and make him go faster. In this game, about the first 1.5 to 2 seconds of when Flink is moving, he moves at an extremely slow rate before he gets up to his normal speed, okay? This is the exact opposite of what you want in a platform game. Because when you are playing a platform game, you want to have complete control over all aspects of your character. You want to be able to know exactly how fast he's going to move at all times, so you can set up all the complex jumps that you have to make in a platformer. Because in a platformer, the challenge comes from being able to leap across pits, jump up to high, hard-to-reach places, and be able to vault yourself over or onto enemies. In this game, you can't do any of those things effectively because of the single decision that the coder made to not start Flink moving immediately at the speed that he goes at. Yeah, I understand why he did it. He's like, here's something that's never been done in a platform game before. This is always a prelude to the worst decision you could possibly make. Because there's a reason why this has never been done in a platforming game before. You want to be able to control your character, and because Flink doesn't move at his normal speed within the first 1.5 to 2 seconds, it makes it extremely difficult to line up anything precise with the movement that you have to do with the controller.
Well, I don't entirely disagree with you. I think you pretty much, this guy reminds me of, like, because this same concept is in Sonic, okay? This is like if Sonic were like 80. You know, because his top speed is Sonic's
speed. Here's the thing. You're right and you're wrong. Okay? I agree with you to a point.
Yeah.
Because Sonic does have multiple speeds. You're right. Sonic, he has his normal walking speed, and then he has his running faster speed. You're dead on. You're not wrong. The difference is that in a game like Sonic, they don't expect you to make the kind of platforming maneuvers that you have to make in this game. Sonic is a game where you are expected to do platforming at the slower speed, but this game requires you to go to the higher speed before you have the velocity that you need to make these jumps. One of the biggest problems with Sonic, because Sonic is great in a lot of ways, but Sonic is no Mario in terms of actual quality platforming. Sonic's whole reason for existing is moving quickly, okay? In Flink, you can move quickly, but whenever you're moving quickly, your guy seems out of control, and it's usually a shortcut to death. Whenever you see him moving quickly down a hillside, he's flailing his arms, his eyes are bugged out. He is not, it's the complete opposite of Sonic, where whenever you're moving quickly, you're like, yeah, I'm going to hit a loop-de-loop and it's going to look rad. In Flink, whenever you start moving quickly, you go down a hill, it means, hey, I'm going to hit a pit and I'm going to die.
I should mention that there are some elements of the speeding up running that are in Lionheart as well. And the funny thing is, I kind of wish they'd kept the same approach that they did in Lionheart. Lionheart would speed up when he was going down hills and stuff, but he had a pretty brisk pace out of the gate. He's a lion. Right. You know what
I mean? That's it.
I will say, Flink is more like if I was adventuring. It's like, it's going to take me a while to get going. You know, and you're right. I mean, how many times on the very first screen did you get hit and fall into the pit by the first guy. Because it's right away, you're like, okay, I've got to figure out how to judge this stuff because of the difference in his, he meanders. And in some ways, this guy's, it's like, it's sort of like gods. This is kind of your kickback, very odd, very rare kickback scrolling platformer game where you just, your guy meanders along until he doesn't. And what that does, it's exactly what you said. It makes parts that he has to perform some sort of intricate maneuver much more difficult until you really get used to how Flink operates. Now, I will say, I did get used to it pretty quickly, and the game is set up, I mean, with dumb deaths aside, it's not set up to screw you. It gives you a chance to figure out what you're doing, which is okay. I mean, you can die right away. Don't get me wrong, but, you know, it's a dumb death. It's sort of like hitting the first bad guy in Mario, except it's less your, it's in Mario, in that game, you're an idiot. In this game, it's not necessarily your fault. Well, you're getting used to controls.
I don't think, again, it is, this game is set up in sort of the same way. This is kind of like, you know, in 18th century England, you started to see a lot of tourists coming to England from the continent. And one of the French visitors remarked that they saw the shoes that the British women were wearing, and it was like they'd heard of the concept of shoes, but had never actually seen one before. I feel like that's the way this game is with a platforming game, a Japanese platforming game. They'd heard that there were these things called Japanese platformers. They might have seen a picture, but they never actually played one.
Well, you know, I'm going to disagree with you big time on that. I think this was a stylized choice made by people that were very good at their job. And I don't think it. I don't think it wholly detracts from the playability of the game once you get used to how Flink controls. Once you understand how to operate Flink and understand exactly how he's going to go through this world, I didn't have that much trouble. I enjoyed
really.
It.
So you completed this game over the course of last.
Oh, I didn't complete it. God no. But I got pretty far with the continues that you had at your disposal, because you give me, I think it's three continues. I got to the first world's boss, which I thought was a pretty good, and I got through a lot of the game.
Dying right now, if you're watching on TV, this is where I died over and over and over again. So I'm glad
really?
That whoever gameplay that you got that from, that I literally died there over and over again. So I'm glad that I was not the only person that struggled with that.
Yeah, I know. I really honestly, once I played this a few times, I came to grips with the play style pretty quickly. So let's get into the actual lore of the game, because okay. There is lore, Boat. The plot of this game, this is ripped from the pages. Disaster strikes in Magicka Island, and Wicked Wainwright's taken over. He's kidnapped the four island leaders, separated them, and has them under the crazy, watchful eyes of the demon guardians. Excited by his newfound control, he's gone absolutely crazy. He's casting dark clouds of smoke across the land, bringing unpleasant weather and much sadness to the people of Magicka. In a huge panic, the islanders appoint Flink, an apprentice wizard, to challenge Wicked Wainwright and to force the demon guardians to release the island's leaders. Locate the leaders, bring their powers together, and help make Flink the full-fledged wizard he's always wanted to be. Not the most original backstory we've ever heard, but not the most ludicrous backstory we've ever heard. The main menu of this game is very sparse. You can start a new game, or you can go to the option screen, and the option screen basically let you pick the, you know, sound effects and change the language, I believe. I think that's pretty much about the long and short.
I mean, you can set the number of continues that you have. There's all kinds of things that you can do.
Really? I don't remember seeing that. Dadgum, I wish I could have known that. I would have made them higher.
Yeah, you can set this game at an unlimited number of continues. The only difference is that it will not let you complete the final level.
I see.
I was not in any danger of completing the final level.
Since this game was a CD32 game, and let's go ahead and talk about this, Boat. Of course, this takes full advantage of the CD32 controller. So this game gives you multiple buttons without having to compromise for any sort of Amiga computer like low-end version of the controls.
Amiga, low-end.
Well, come on now.
That's just the way it is.
No, don't be nasty. So this game gives you the ability to, there's an action button, there's a jump button, There's a button to do. You can hit your start button to go in your magic and do that stuff. But then there's one button that, as much as I like this game, is the dumbest thing I think I've ever seen in any game in my whole life. And that is mapped to the controller. At least it was mapped to mine, and it was in the instructions, too, because I looked. Is a button that lets you change the frequency of the monitor, the output. How many times did you hit this there and you play?
Yeah, because, you know, as you're playing around, it's the green button on the CD32 controller. It's the square button on the Mister.
Yeah.
I don't know why you'd ever want to change that on the fly, you know, because it seems like if you're putting that on a face button, it seems like that's something you'd want to set in the original options menu. Like when you choose the number continues that you want, why they map that to a face button. I can only assume it's because in the CD32 design docs, since they were creating this as a CD32 exclusive game, they're like, listen, guys, we've got four face buttons on here. And you better make darn sure you make use of all four face buttons.
Listen, I like this game, but I'm going to say, is this, of all the things we've ever done, is this the stupidest thing you've ever seen perpetrated?
No.
I mean, I thought this was grade A stupid.
I mean, it's dumb, but once you know to avoid it, you just don't push that button. So, I mean, it's odd, but like I said, I think that there was probably a reason they did it that had to do with the fact that they were making a CD32 exclusive game. And I think that the folks at Amiga, I think Irving Gould probably called these guys up and he's like, listen, if you're going to make a CD32 exclusive game, you got to use all the buttons on the controller or you can't do it. We're not going to let you do it.
I could just imagine someone playing this on like a specialized TV, you know, and they don't pay attention. They don't read the rule book. They start playing and hit that button, and all of a sudden the thing goes bananas. And they're just sitting there going, like, what just happened? What just happened? And not knowing to hit the button again to fix it. I mean, you can imagine this happening. Think of the amount of cost of tech support. They're like, what's going on? This was dumb. There's no way to justify this dumb, dumb move. We mentioned, Boat, that this starts off with a lovely overworld map, big one, I might add. Mm-hmm. And it's quite well done. And then you start off in a forest area with Flink. Flink is a kid. He looks like he's about, I don't know, 10 or something.
Yeah.
He's got sort of a blonde Pete Rose haircut, a cape. Mm-hmm. But in terms of mascots, this guy he's like way off the charts.
He looks like a freaking stud compared to most of the Amiga mascots.
He reminds me sort of who's the guy that's in all the PC, the DOS platform games.
That's Jazz Jackrabbit.
No, not Jazz Jackrabbit. The kid, you know, the little kid. He reminds me of that guy, sort of. Someone will shout it out there. But this guy looks good. He moves. I mean, he's not the dorkiest guy I've ever seen. He looks okay. I mean, he looks good, but he's drawn sort of cutesy. Yeah.
Yeah.
You'll notice when the game starts, you're in a forest level to begin, and you've got lovely backgrounds. Hank has done his magic. He works well in like the organic medium, like with trees and vines and stuff. And so everywhere you look, you know, he's got a ton of detail in everything. And it's just very lush, I thought. You also, there's an aspect of this game that is unusual for a game like this, which is your guy is a wizard, and he'll gather items throughout the game, and then once he gets enough magic, he can actually, and gets the proper scroll, he can make his own spells, which are like little powers that you can get. You can get a little demon to follow you, you can shrink yourself, you can make yourself fly at some points. There's a goodly amount of different powers you can get in this. And the one thing this does, and I want to get your opinion on this, Boat, because this game has, I don't know, 13 different types of pickups, ingredients, and you can make 10 different types of spells. Normally, we crush these games for having a bunch of idiotic pickups that we don't care about and don't understand. What's your opinion of this system when we're having these pickups that actually you actually use to make these spells?
I think it's great with a butt.
Okay.
I believe that if you're going to include a power-up system of any kind, in the first world, you need to demonstrate how that power-up system works. I played this game. I got to basically 1-3 when I played this game. And I played it a lot. I just couldn't get past that one part. I was never able to craft a spell. Now, I believe that the way that this works is you have to not only have all three of the ingredients that are needed to craft a spell, but you also have to have your magic meter filled up to the top. Is that correct?
I think that's the way it works. And you also have to have the scroll to tell you how to make the spell.
The scroll, yeah. This is overly complicated. Okay, this is overly complicated. You got to take out one of the three things, okay? Either A, you know all the ingredients ahead of time and you know what ingredients make one spell. B, you can create, you have to find the scroll and you have to find the ingredients. Or C, you have to have enough magic to make the scroll, but then you already know what the ingredients are, okay? All three of those things is too much. It's too much for a platforming game. Platforming games, by their nature, are supposed to be simple things, okay? Because in a platforming game, the challenge comes from the fast decisions that you have to make. They're reflexive decisions, okay? So all three of those things, having to get the scroll, having to get the ingredients, and then having to be good enough to fill up your magic meter, which, by the way, with one hit by an enemy, you can have a completely full magic meter, which probably takes, I would say, about 12 to 14 little pickups to fill. With one hit, that goes away. And it's not like Sonic, where all the rings come out and you can pick them up kind of leisurely and get 75% of them back. That's not the way this game works. It's extremely difficult to fill your magic meter to the top to be able to cast one of these spells. The spell component is probably the weakest area of the game because they made it overly complex and they made it too difficult to even craft the most simple spell.
I'm going to disagree with you, at least on some of that. Because the magic bottle doubles at your hit points, like you said. So
yeah,
it's an interesting way to do it. I mean, I will say I'm sure they had inspiration from Sonic in some ways because of the rings aspect of it. And you're right. Once you get hit, you do lose it. So, I mean, yes, there's no doubt about that. I agree with you on that. And the spell thing to me, I'm not going to say it seems like it's tacked on because there are absolutely parts of the game where you have to have it to get to these certain levels. But I think it gives the game, sometimes they add stuff and it gives it artificial depth. I think this gives it real depth. It is neat to have these extra things to help you.
It only helps you if it helps you.
Right,
were you ever able to craft a spell in this game?
Oh yeah, I crafted a spell.
Did you craft?
I crafted I crafted the demon one that where he follows you around. That because I
does
got
it
several
do when
scrolls.
He follows you around?
Well, you could. It's sort of like was it R-Type where you had the little satellite that you kind of shoot at your enemies? He kind of works like that. The spells, once you get the scroll, it tells you what you need, and it tells you how many of the things you have. So it's not like it's real complex to figure out. I mean, it tells you if you've got what you need.
I never said it was complex to figure out.
Right, but I'm just saying, I don't think it's that bad. It's not, because it's an aspect of the game that doesn't require you to do things in a split second. Generally, you're going to do that when you're, like, sitting still. You're not going to be trying to do that in the middle of something. So, I mean, is it the smoothest? And I will say one thing I don't like about it is, in fact, this is a slight on the entire game, is that occasionally, in fact, we're seeing it right now, you'll be confronted with this, like, text screen and, like, a thought bubble. It just looks real jakey. I mean, it just looks, it comes up. It looks like somebody's typing it real quick.
It's a very Blitz basic effect.
It looks, I don't know about that. I don't know what it is. It doesn't look. If when you look at all the lushness and all the cool stuff
going on.
Well,
I mean, it looks like an Amiga game versus a console game.
No, would you stop? Yeah, you're just trying to cause trouble. But that was not that well done. And the spell thing, I mean, could they have not had that in the game? They could have.
But I don't want them to take it out. Like I said.
Right, but I mean, they didn't have to have it.
Here's the thing. Being able to fill up your magic meter is so difficult. It's so difficult not to take hits in this game. And the reason why is because of my second biggest problem with this game. And that is the hitboxes of this game are horrible. Horrible. The hitboxes and the ledge boxes. I cannot count the amount of times that I thought I was jumping on an enemy, and I did, even though I jumped through the enemy, because this is one of these games, it's in the Mario tradition, the Sonic tradition, where you jump on top of a dude. And this is a very Brian the Lion type game, where the enemies in this game are not necessarily your enemies. They're going about their business. They're just trying to live their simple peasant lives, and you're jumping on their heads to get them to die. And well, so
sometimes they scurry away.
You do that, they scurry away, then you try and jump on them as they're running away. You jump on their backpack, and their backpack is not included in their hitbox. And and when that happens, you lose every single point of magic that you have. So, like I said, I find it to be a minor miracle that you were ever able to cast a spell in this game.
You act like you don't believe me. I'm just telling you what happened. I played this game quite a bit, and this is my second go-around on this. And the truth of the matter is, I didn't think the hitboxes were... Now, I will agree with you on the ledges. There's no doubt about the ledges. They are... And again, that comes down to the movement of Flink, because you really have to get used to the way he moves, and you will miss ledges. And by the way, I have the same problem sometimes in Lionheart, you know. So it's a problem that traveled. But the enemies, I had trouble just timing. I mean, in terms of the hitbox, you could be dead on. But I just had trouble timing them in general until I got used to it. And you never really fully get used to it, because it's a real. It's an unusual speed, because they're moving at an unusual speed, and they're moving faster than you are often, and you're moving at an unusual change, ever changing speed, because you're picking up speed, and it could be weird. I will say the funny thing is, when it comes to the actual platforming elements, I didn't have that much trouble with those. I thought they were pretty tight. And there are some real unusual elements in this game. There's a section where you're jumping on falling leaves. There's tons of Lionheart-like sections where you're on like revolving stuff and rotating stuff. There's areas where you're jumping on lily pads. Some areas of this game you can fall to your death, and some areas you'll fall into water and you can swim a little bit, and unless you stop swimming and you'll die. But you can't really tell where what you're going to hit, so you're better off just not going in there unless you can see the water. But I didn't have too much trouble navigating the actual various items. There's a bit where you have a... So one of the things you could do in this is use your action button to grab stuff, like vines. There's a section where you jump up and grab a vine that an ape's on, and you can maneuver the vine across this chasm, you know? And that's kind of neat. You could also use your action button to pick up treasure chests and rocks and throw them. There's an interesting bit in part of it, I think fairly early on, where you get to a seesaw, a teeter-totter, and you've got to take rocks and throw it on the other side to bounce yourself up in the air. You know what I'm talking about? And the neat element of that is you have to get a rock up to the second level, so you've got to jump up with a rock, throw it up there ahead of time, so you'll be able to get off that level. So you kind of have to, it's puzzly. There's a lot of puzzly elements to it, which I enjoy that sort of thing in a game like this, where it doesn't make it so difficult that there's no possible way that you could figure it out. Lionheart had its bouncing on the backs of beetles and stuff like that, and this thing has its own little tricks, including some that were in Lionheart, including stuff like jumping on the revolving leaves and jumping on the floating the floating stuff. What did you think about the puzzly elements of this thing, Bode?
I mean, aside from that one thing that you're talking about, I don't think that I would call any of the aspects of this game puzzly. I don't think using a teeter-totter to lift a rock up to a second level is puzzle.
The puzzly part is having the knowledge to jump up and throw a rock up there first.
I guess if you're two, then that would be a puzzle. Listen, let's cut to the chase. Is this a better game than Lionheart? Yes. Yes. 1,000 times yes.
No.
They took everything that they learned from Lionheart and made it better. And by better, I mean they took things that they learned from Lionheart and combined it with the Japanese platforming industry to create Flink. But the problem is that because of the design decisions they made, which it all comes back to just not letting Flink move at full speed right at the beginning of his jump, and making too many things contingent upon the fact that Flink has to be moving at full speed to make certain jumps, I can't give this game a good grade, okay? Everything else about this game is fantastic. Okay, the spell system, despite its faults, despite the fact that it's almost impossible to fill your magic container to be able to actually perform a spell, it's nice to be able to collect items that have a use, okay? Graphically, this game is probably the best game that's ever appeared on the Amiga. It's definitely the best-looking platformer that is on the Amiga. There's no question about it. I really like all of the different graphical effects. We're looking at sort of the Space Harrier level here, where you have some pseudo-scaling sprites of some dragons that are coming up from the bottom.
They use a lot of that sort of thing in this, and the balls and stuff.
Yeah, all of that stuff is top-notch. The music in this game is wonderful. It's wonderful. It's music and sound effects. Like you said, the overworld map. I can't knock any of that stuff. The problem is they try to get cute with the control system. And all they'd have to do is they'd say, what's the most successful platform game of all time? Oh, yeah, it's Super Mario Brothers. Oh, yeah, it's freaking 1995, and the N64 is less than a year coming out. Let's go back to the Super Mario World, okay? Let's just make Flink control like Mario does in Super Mario World. If they would have done that, that's all they have to do. They don't have to reinvent the wheel. That's what they should have done. Kept the spell system, kept everything else, they would have had an all-time classic. Unfortunately, the controls are what make or break a platformer game, and the controls definitely break Flink.
Well, I don't think this is better than Lionhearts, because I like having the sword. I like it's Lionhearts a quicker game. You know, I like the plot and stuff better. This is a cutesier game. I do think this is a really good platformer. I don't think the controls are enough to hose it, because I got used to the controls. Now, there's a difference between getting used to controls and saying, like, is this the way I like to play? I can understand that. But I got into it. I enjoyed it. I don't mind a little slower gameplay because I'm slow. So you have to.
I cannot imagine a world in which this game moves slower than Lionheart.
Oh,
because Lionheart is
an
incredibly slow-moving platformer.
No, it's not this slow. I don't think. But because Lionheart just moves. What makes this game really slow is this guy's just slow. Like, even at top speed, he's not that fast, and he starts off slow. You're right. I agree with you on all that. But I mean, it wasn't enough for me to. I enjoyed it. I do agree that this is one of your more premier games on the Amiga in terms of a platform. I mean, it's got style. It's original. The music's unusual, but it fits the game. You know, in a weird way, because it's this game. I think they wanted to make a style. They made style choices, much like in Lionheart, that some people like and some people don't. You know, I think it's a real clever game. It's quite a full game. I mean, you've got 11, 14, 19, 20, 22, 20, about 22, 23 stages. There's some hidden stages that you have to be able to use your magic to get to, which is neat. Not every stage, but most stages have an end boss. The end bosses are pretty cool. I saw there was one. There was like a big robot. There's a big monster on a stick. That's the guy that got me. Then he's like on these two stilts. Then there's a gorilla you fight. It's always cool to see the gorilla come in. And some of the levels that are particularly beautiful, like the cloud level, where you can see that Hank went in and he made the clouds with these faces on them. They're beautiful. I mean, expressionist art. I mean, they're just beautiful the way they're rendered. Some of the monsters are clever that come out of the ground. There's quicksand. There's all kinds of weird stuff that happens. You know, so they mix it up pretty well. You know, you've got five or six different types of backgrounds and stages. So, I mean, they do all the stuff that you need to do to have be considered a successful platform game. So, I did enjoy this one. I'll be interested to hear what the people thought. I will tell you what the magazines thought. For starters, Lemon gave this an 8.33, that's a pretty good score for Lemon. And the people over at Hall of Light gave this a 79. The magazines were pretty kind for the most part. Of course, this was 95, so they were probably like, they probably couldn't believe their luck when this came out. Amiga Action gave this an 86. A CD32 Gamer gave this an 82. You'd think they'd give it a ton. Amiga Joker gave this an 82. AUI gave it an 85. So the total magazine average is right around 80, you know, which that's okay. Amiga Computer didn't like this, gave it a 66. They were the low man on the totem pole, but everyone else seemed to like it quite a bit. Again, it was ported over to the Genesis. You said you played a lot of this for the Genesis, but did the Genesis fix any of the problems you had with the Amiga version in any significant way, in your opinion?
No. No, I mean, it made it more full screen. But, I mean, this is, I mean, it's pretty much the same game. The way that the Amiga or the CD32 renders graphics in some ways, and I can't put a point on it, but there's just something about the shading that I think looks better on the CD32. But overall, I played this mostly on the Mega Drive once I realized it was the exact same game, just because I wanted the music. And we played this on the Mister, with the Mister, the way that they strip out the ISO file from the CD, it didn't supply the music. And you can't play a platformer game without music. It just becomes too much
silence. I played this on my emulator as well, just for that reason, because it did have the music. The funny thing is, and this, you know, it's funny, nothing's perfect, right? So you can play this on the Amiga or on the Mister, it works fine. You just don't get the tunes. And I played this on the emulation, and it worked fine until you lost all your lives, and then it crashed. So I couldn't win for losing. I was just like, well, I'm screwed. But yeah, if you're going to play this on the Mega Drive, just you can play either version, unless you just want the Redbook audio real bad. But yeah, I think they're quite comparable. I think that on the Genesis, the inks, the blacks, to me, look a little bit better. Does this make any sense? Mm-hmm. Like, finer? Does that make sense, mm-hmm. Bo, what I'm saying?
Sure. Yeah.
I will say, as you go through this game, and I notice as I'm looking at this level now, so much of this game reminded me of what Hank did in Lionheart, artificially, I was like, oh, man. He really did a lot of the same stuff. And just for FYI, and it's funny, me and you talked about this, boat. The PlayStation got and the PC got versions of sort of like this of a game called Adventures of Lomax. So I remember playing this on stream, and what reminded me when I read this, because we talked about it, they took the lore and made it Lemmings type lore. So in the Lomax game, the story itself is all about the Lemmings, if you can believe that. That's out there. If you want to try this on the PC or on the PlayStation, which I thought was interesting. Bo, did we get any Discord action on this, my friend?
We did. We did. We got a review from Pajaco6502. Pajaco6502 writes, "This has to be one of the most beautiful Amiga games I've ever seen. A little Rayman, a little Sonic. It's pretty neat to look at.
Rayman, but yeah.
It's a Euro platformer through and through, with level design clearly designed for you to fail forward rather than test your skill as a player. The sprite collision is imperfect, meaning you'll fall off platforms before you reach the edge, and it's easy to miss when jumping on an enemy and take damage. Spell menu feels a little tacked on. The delay it takes to enable and disable is noticeably long." That's one thing whenever you pause the game, it's like literally 1 second, which doesn't seem like a lot of time unless you've played any other game ever in your life.
It's also weird. I wonder what's going on there.
One major gripe I had, and this Pajaco continues, was that some platform elements like falling leaves were required to traverse levels would not respond if you messed up. You basically had to backtrack far enough away to trigger it spawning in place again.
Yeah. That's
however, true. This game has a lot of fun things going for it. One, you can pick up a lot of things, including enemies, and hurl them across the screen. And overall, it's fun to play despite the things I wasn't a fan of. The whole thing feels like an early test release and needs a little more polish on the Amiga. The Mega Drive version is the way to go for the intended experience. But if you are Elon Musk, who can just about afford a copy for the CD32, it's worth checking out on real hardware to see something cool. And Bumface Poohans writes, "What can be said about Amiga platformers that hasn't been said before? At least this one has a jump button, and also a button to toggle refresh rates. A sure first and surely the last game to do this. Things start well with a nice-looking opening level, although since this also got a Mega Drive release, you can't help but think the CD32 wasn't used to its full potential. But the whole thing is quickly let down by a feature described in the manual as Blink will begin moving slowly, then start to run, which basically means you end up running off the side of platforms that should be easy to traverse. Maybe they should have used one of those buttons for run. A misadventure indeed."
Well, I didn't know how the listeners and viewers are going to take it. I mean, they brought up pretty much the same points that we did. I mean, this is a game. It's again, I'm going to go back to Gods. which I think is another great platformer, that, but some people like it, some people don't like it. I'd say Gods is just slow. It still has really
good
control.
Gods is slow in Buddy is what God is.
I don't know what Buddy means.
Buddy is a nice way of not cursing.
Well,
it is. It is not an action. It's not a platforming game. Gods is like a puzzle game that masquerades as a platforming game. It's like Gloomhaven is an Ameritrash game it's a Euro game that masquerades as an Ameritrash game. It's no good, is what I'm saying. Gods.
Well, I don't agree. I like Gods, and I like this, and I will say this, and I wanted to pose this question to you before we move on. You know, when the CD32 was released, the pack-in game and the added pack-in games later, I thought were duds. We actually played the pack-in game for this a while back, and I think to myself, if you're going to
pack-in game for the CD32,
I'm trying to think of what it was, but it was not Gnomes, or it was something like. Oh boy, I have to look it up now. But my point is this:
the CD32 came with a pack-in game.
Oh yeah, but Diggers.
Oh, okay.
Thank you,
Diggers. That's
and so
is.
My point is, and say what you will about this game, because you didn't hate it. You admitted that.
This would be a much
better pack-in game, because this is showing something that you're not seeing on your Amiga. You know, this right here. At least, even if you don't like it, you can be like, wow. This looks like something you can play on a console. This looks like something that, like, I paid extra money to get. Better graphics, mm-hmm. better sound. You know, this would have been what you wanted to pack in there, not what they did. And many of the other releases.
Yeah, of all the CD32 games we played, this would be the one that I'd want to pack in with the console to give the false impression that what I was buying was a next-gen console.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not... I mean, if you cranked out game after game in this ilk of this quality,
I mean, this is one of the better games of 1992 on the consoles.
Well, I mean, it came out on the Genesis, so I mean, they clearly thought enough of it to release it, you know, and on the CD.
I don't know what that means.
Well, I'm just saying it was clearly someone had thought this was a good enough game in 1995 to release it on the consoles.
Yeah, somebody did, only in Europe, of course, where they still like these kind of games.
Oh, you know, I permission to handle Boat as a hostile witness, ladies and gentlemen.
I priced this
on eBay.
If they really believed in this game, they would have given it a universal release, not just released it in Europe with all those Asterix games.
Don't give me... People, Asterix is popular. On eBay, if you want to try to pick this up, and someone mentioned this, this game is priced out the door. I didn't see anyone that had bought one at this price, but these were selling for over $500. $500 to $600.
Sure. This is a highly desirable release, because first of all, this is like the follow-up to Lionheart, which is one of the most beloved Amiga games of all time.
Two,
how many games were released exclusively for the CD32 that didn't get Amiga releases?
I'd say a handful.
I mean, you can count them on one hand. Yeah.
Yeah, not that many. And how many good ones on top of that? So
yeah.
If this is something you want to check out and you can get used to controls, I think you could really have a good time with Flink. I liked it more than the Boat, but I think we both had a certain respect for it. The art, the visual brilliance, the music, they were all very nice, and they did a lot of the things that we like in a platformer correctly. So if you're so inclined, give this one a whirl.
If you ask any Amiga repair technician what the most problematic component of a motherboard is, they'll undoubtedly mention capacitors. The electrolytic capacitors that ship with the Amiga are 30 years old or older at this point, and each one is a ticking time bomb waiting to explode battery acid all over your motherboard, sometimes damaging it irrevocably. Don't wait. Replace your capacitors now. Full capacitor kits for every Amiga model are available now at retrorewind.ca. Don't want to attempt the repair yourself? Use their white glove recap service and leave the intricate removal and soldering process to the professionals using industry standard equipment. Use the promo code AMIGOS10 at checkout and save 10% off your cap kit or service. Remember, make retrorewind.ca your first stop for all your Commodore computer needs.
Amiga News.
Campbell Train. All right, Aaron, we start with one of the biggest news stories I believe we've talked about on Amiga News in quite a while. This is a... Oh, this is something different than I thought it was. Okay, I apologize. I was looking at the YouTube screenshot ahead. So the first thing is Amiga Addict is now integrated into Lemon Amiga results. This is not one of the bigger news stories we've ever covered on the show, but it's still worth covering. So, you know, Aaron, as we roll down the list of magazine reviews for these games, one of the things that we like to do on the show is talk about what all the magazines thought of the game that we're covering for the week. Well, now, starting with this week, if a game is reviewed in Amiga Addict, they take that score and the review into the aggregate of the total magazine score. So one of the things that I like about this is that I get my name mentioned on Lemon Amiga, at least sort of in some way. So in Amiga Addict 2, February 2021, I wrote a review of the Addams Family. I scored it at 92%. And now on Lemon Amiga, that affects the overall magazine rating. What do you think about that, Aaron?
I think that's great. By the way, there was no person more qualified to have a look at that game than you. God knows I've seen you beat that thing enough times over the years. So you're the King Dong of the Addams Family. So, but I think that's great. I love the fact that you're getting some more modern magazine in here. And, of course, we know that the people that work for Amiga Addict are all top shelf. So you're gonna get a good quality, you're gonna get a good quality review from. So that's dandy. I was wondering what that meant because I hadn't heard this news. This should be more ballyhooed. That's a real great thing. I'm happy for
it's
Lemon.
Really cool.
Yeah. I love Lemon, yeah, and I love
it's
Amiga
great
Addict.
For Lemon, and it's great for Amiga Addict. So everybody wins.
It's great, and they're both invaluable resources, Bode.
Now this next story, Aaron. This is Disc Flashback. And this is something that the community has been clamoring for years. You've got all these old Amiga discs, and you want to be able to stick them in your, you know, regular floppy drive and be able to have Windows read them. Well, now you can, thanks to Disk Flashback. You can actually pop one of your discs, your old Amiga discs, into a regular old drive and run this Windows program, and Windows can read it. Now, the question is, does this negate the use of the grease weasel, Aaron?
So let me get this straight, because I've not seen this. This is the first I've heard of this. I could take an Amiga disc, Amiga formatted disc. I could hold it up. I could put it in a PC floppy drive, and it'll read it without the use of any extra hardware.
That's
right. Wow! Holy smokes, that is huge. No, I mean that's that's great. I love that. I think that's dandy. I never would have saw that coming. I didn't think it was possible without any sort of hardware modification to do that. How incredible. Yeah. Does it work for ST?
It's not only for the Amiga, it's also for the Atari ST. Basically, any of these old 16-bit machines that use the old 3.5-inch discs, just pop it in there and it'll go.
Wow. Wow. Do we know who's responsible for that? Because that is something.
No.
That is
something.
I have
no idea.
I got to give credit to the folks, and we'll find out. That I can't believe that. I'm gobsmacked on that. I didn't think that was even physically possible, because I knew people would hook up Amiga floppy disk to their PC with a gimmick, But no, I didn't. Mm-hmm. I had no idea you could do that. That's amazing. Disk Flashback, retro floppy disk software for Windows. So there you go, everybody. That's one of the biggest news stories of the year. That's a huge deal, Boat. Very good. That's a good find, Boat. Holy smokes.
And this comes to us from, I'm going to get the name of the YouTube channel here. This is Rob Smith Dev is who he is. And I believe that he did not write this software, but he is the one that is showcasing it here. So check out his video. Of course, you can find all of these links on r/AmigaNews on Reddit.
And thumbs up to Mr. Smith. That is, you have done the community a great service right there.
Mitsuyama says Rob Smith is the one that's done this. And it's not the guy from The Cure. I noticed that by the way that he looks not like the other Robert Smith.
Yeah, not pudgy, pale, with the crazy hair. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Amazing. Amazing story, Boat.
All right, Aaron, coming up next is the Soulless LED controller. Now, Aaron, I know you've got your tricked out 1200 right in front of you right now. It's got all the gadgets. It's got the real-time clock. It's got the LCD screen. Well, nope. What it's missing, Aaron, is the old Solus board. That's right. Just imagine, Aaron, whenever you load up a game, imagine having a board that triggers LED lights that will fire up from underneath the sort of air escape valves in the top of your Amiga 1200. It'll make all kinds of different colors, do all kinds of different wacky things. The Solus RGB LED controller does all and knows all.
This I think thing, Amiga Aaron, Bill has this thing, because I've seen Amiga's Bill's computer, like, it's like a sideshow.
That's right, Amiga Bill is one of the few, the lucky few that has one of these things. But, Aaron, the reason why we're mentioning it is one of our own, not to say that Amiga Bill is not one of our own, but one of our real own has got one of these things. Edvin over in Norway has got one of these things. He's finally convinced the maker of one of these, because you know how these guys are. This is your Britney Pears type guy, Rob the Nerd. He doesn't do nothing for nobody, never. But when you're Edvin and you're King Dong, you say, listen, Rob the Nerd, I want one of these things. And he makes it happen.
I'm really looking forward to
seeing this thing in action on Edvin's machine. Like I said, Amiga Bill's got one. And who knows? Maybe this is going to be the sort of tipping point that makes Rob the Nerd make these available en masse to make these, you know, get a shipment out to Kickstart. I want to see these things sold over in Nottingham, Rob.
I can't tell if you, like, would you put something like this in a computer?
Absolutely. Why would you not?
I can't tell. I just can't. I mean, I really, everything you say drips with so much sarcasm that I can't cut through it. I don't know.
Here's the thing. If you've got an Amiga, right? Okay.
Yeah.
One of the things about the Amiga 500 and the 1200 is it's got that grill. Okay. Why is that grill there? Who the heck knows? Okay.
Air.
So you got to put something in there. Air. Listen, air is overrated. So you put the LEDs in there, and then you make the LEDs move with whatever you're doing. I mean, to me, like, I'm sitting here. What do I have next to me? I've got an Atari 1200 XL. It's got no grill. It doesn't use air. But if I had an Amiga sitting next to me, I'd absolutely outfit this with the LEDs.
You know, I'm looking. I was wondering if there's, like, a gimmick on here to, like, order it. You know what I mean? Because it's got awesome. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, there's not. You're right. This is,
that's
like, you got to know a guy type stuff.
You got to know a guy.
You think we got enough pull to get Rob the Nerd to send us one of these for some money?
Well, listen, one of the things I think we need is one of us to actually use a real hardware Amiga, which I've got mine hooked up.
I use it every once in a while, but yeah, you're right. Yeah. I've got crap on my Mister, but even that's not that cool. This looks good. I've seen these in action because of Amiga Bill, and yeah, looks great. I'm glad Evan got one. He's the perfect guy to get one of those. That's a good deal right there. I like that.
Now, Aaron, you this morning on the Discord, you posted a flurry of links to talk about. I can't wait to hear what you have to say about each one of these, and of course, I'll be ready to weigh in too, having not watched any of them.
So
this is the first one comes to us from Stephen Foster.
Yeah, Stephen, of course, of the Checkmate fame. Is going through an update here. I haven't heard anything about the monitors, most crazy monitors from, I don't know, last year, I think it was. I mean, maybe 2 years. But Steven has like an update because they haven't shipped these things yet. They're still working on them, you know. Mm-hmm. But there was, listen to this. I like Steve, okay? I think he's a good guy. I think he does quality work, and I think he's given himself a task that's unbelievably difficult. I mean, every time, all right? We can agree on that. And the people who order this stuff are very, they believe in Steven, and he's earned their trust. There's nothing, I think Steven is, I mean, I don't necessarily always think that the stuff he sells, it's not something that appeals to me, but it clearly appeals to a lot of people. And these monitors have appealed to a lot of people, to the tune of thousands of pre-orders, right? And he goes into this thing that's like a nightmare scenario because at some point when payment was getting pushed through to somebody, like someone panicked and basically like they had to instantly refund like all the people that had paid with their credit cards. And so now he's got to get those people to send the money back, but via a different route. And it's England and he won't use PayPal or Google Pay. Or Amazon.
None of those guys use any of that stuff.
So they have, but he wants like a direct bank transfer. Well, you can't do
that. It's
a well-known
fact that England is mostly a cash economy.
It may be. Listen, I can't see
through. That's how it is.
But so it's a big snafu. All right, it's nobody's fault. I'm not blaming him. I'm just saying this is like a nightmare scenario. And he's at the point where he's like, we got to get the money in because we're getting ready to have the remaining parts of the sucker built, you know? And so he was unleashing the news that, like, if people who had pre-ordered didn't get their money in soon enough, that he was going to allow people that were waiting in line to jump ahead of the people that pre-ordered.
Yeah, because, to me, that's fair. That's
because
fair.
They had the money, you know, that where right. is my money deal.
Where is my money?
And so I didn't want to talk about this to crap on Steven. I just want to point out how difficult and insane that trying any of these projects are involving, because he said one of the problems he was having, like anyone in Europe could just send up money through the bank, direct bank transfer, right?
It's the Eurobank. Yeah.
But in America, the banks over here are evil. They're double evil. Mm-hmm. And so they're tacking on fees to the tune of 3-5%. You got to pay.
Even more.
You know? Mm-hmm. And so it's a hassle. And people end up, it's funny, some people had to pay more. And some people actually had to pay less, depending on the conversion, you know? Most more. And so it's a huge headache. And I feel bad for this guy. It's nice to see the project. I'm dying to see one of these things, like, in the wild, to see what, you know, at the end of the day, like, what have we got here? But the project has really got hosed. And so hopefully the people that are pre-ordered this will take care of this sooner than later. So this is also a clarion call in case you missed his video and you invested in one of these monitors. You need to get with Steve and Toot Sweet, make sure everything's good to go.
Here's the thing. There is nothing harder to kickstart and to get off the ground and hardware. Hardware is so hard because of all the stuff that goes into it. You know, production pipelines. Yeah. A lot of times you're working with overseas manufacturers. This is a project that never in a million years I would have taken on. So big props. And of course, this guy's last name is Stephen Jones, not Stephen Foster. I like to call him Stephen Foster, but for reasons that I'll leave.
Who is Stephen Foster, Boat? Do we know?
Stephen Foster wrote My Old Kentucky Home. He wrote My Genie with the Raleigh Brown Hair. You know,
he's a lyricist.
He's a balladeer of the 19th century.
You know,
but the here's the thing about Stephen. He doesn't give up, because the easy way out would be like, I'm refunding everybody's money. Forget this ever happened. But he's surging through. He's powering through.
Yeah, he'd also
through.
Take a bath.
Listen,
he would lose his house. So yeah, that's not gonna do that. He's too far in, Boat.
I think that, to me, it is not unfair to say, listen, if you were on the list and you have not sent your money, or if your money had to be returned and you don't give me the money back, I'm going to the people next in line that can deliver on giving me the money. Because this thing's got to get out the door.
This is a crime. This is a problem that was beyond his control. So I think he handled it pretty well. No one got screwed, you know, but the potential to get screwed is there if you don't act. So act quickly. You know, to put this in perspective, I was getting my dad's cable set up today. And when I was talking to the guy on the phone, he's like, hey, what's your address? What's your social security number? And I was telling him the number, and I had to read it to him like 4 times. He goes, legally, I'm not allowed to read that back. It's stuff like that. I'm like, why? He couldn't read back my address or anything. I'm like, why? He's like, legally, we're not allowed to do that. I'm like, what country are we in? So anyway, yeah. Good luck, Steven, and all those backers. The next one, buddy.
All right, Aaron. What do we got next? The game that killed the Amiga. This is controversial.
Is it?
Well, I mean, when you think about the games that killed the Amiga, this is not the game that I would have thought. You know, most of the time when I think about games that killed the Amiga, people always talk about X-Wing. People always talk about Doom. Doom is the big one.
Yeah.
But people don't really mention Wolfenstein 3D. Aaron, do you think that Wolfenstein 3D, the fact that it did not appear on the Amiga, led for Doom to Commodore as a company?
Well, first of all, this guy's a great commentator. I'm gonna make sure I've got his name here. This is more of an art. It's a modern vintage game. He does a lot of good stuff. What he's saying here in essence is that he, like, sort of like what you said, Doom had played a big part in coming off the Amiga. The Amiga couldn't reproduce it. He goes through the facts of like what the PC was doing, what the Amiga was doing, how much better the Amiga was than a lot of stuff that the PC couldn't do. But when his argument is that when Wolfenstein came out, it was a game that the Amiga could not do. could not do and the PC could. It was just because it was the way it was made. And then Doom followed suit. And so what it ushered in was, what the Amiga had its back pocket was, it would have games that would get ported to DOS, and the DOS version wouldn't be as good. And sometimes not even in the ballpark. And then a game came out that the DOS had, and not only was it good, but it couldn't even be ported to the Amiga. The Amiga could not play it. And this is what got people to start saying, hey, wait a minute, what's going on here? And then the dominoes started to fall. It's a compelling argument, and this guy's not a zealot, by the way. His reasoning makes some sense. And it was I found it to be quite an interesting video. So if you get a chance to check this out, it's called Doom Didn't Kill the Amiga. Wolfenstein 3D. I mean, can you follow that reasoning, Boat?
Sure. I mean, there are a million reasons why the Amiga died, and you can even take all of the software and the hardware out of it, and you can just look at the business decisions the Commodore made between 1992 and 1994, and you can say, well, this is why the company died. But like you said, I think that you made that argument succinctly when you said for a long time Amiga games would be ported down to DOS, and now you've got a DOS game that not only cannot be ported down to the Amiga, it can't run on the Amiga at all.
Yeah.
And what are you going to do then?
Yeah, and I mean, I will say, is this the game that made everyone stop using their Amiga? Probably not, but it did start the trend. And then if there was a game that made people stop using their Amiga, it was probably, I mean, you could pick any number of games, anything from a game like Wing Commander, which never should have been on the Amiga, to stuff like X-Wing or Magic Carpet or Doom, which physically couldn't work on the Amiga. So it's an interesting video. I like this guy's stuff, and I would check this out if you get a chance. It's fun, and, you know, we always like to hear stuff about the Amiga. It wasn't, a lot of people were worried that it was going to be like a hit piece or something. No, it was actually compelling. This guy does good stuff.
Mm-hmm. All right, Aaron, next up, we have, this is another popular YouTube channel, Arcade Attack Retro Gaming Network. They've listed their top 10 best Amiga games of all time. Aaron, were there some surprises on there?
You know, it's funny. I just kind of flipped through the list here, you know, and to be honest with you, I didn't see anything that surprised me, because when you think of like what people think of the top Amiga games, stuff like Syndicate and Zool and Monkey Island, you know, and Moonstone, stuff like that. I mean, it's a flashback. I mean, you see the trend here. Like, this was a very safe list he had here, and so you know, I think that's Dune on there. There's your Monkey Island. So I mean, a Sensible Soccer. I don't think there was anything on there that like blew my mind. I, of course, chimed in with my usual chime, which, where's Lionheart, which wasn't mentioned on here. But, you know, when you think, you know, I suspect, Bo, that if me and you were to make up, and I've never done this, I don't think we've ever done it. I know together we haven't. If we were to put together like a top 10 Amiga games list, I think ours would be vastly different from his, and I think ours would probably be vastly different from one another's in a lot of ways. Yeah. You know, so, but I mean, what
maybe
do you think?
We'll have to do that. Maybe we'll have to do that for big episode 500, Aaron.
I mean, really, though, I mean, I will say this fellow didn't pick anything that I thought was egregious. I mean, you could argue that Zool, you know, but Zool's, it's okay. You know, Syndicate, it's okay. Yeah. It's better on the PC. Yeah.
I think what this person maybe tried to do was pick a game from every genre that was best represented on the Amiga. Because you've got the simulation thing, you got Theme Park. You've got Syndicate, which is sort of an isometric type game. You got the platformer in Zool. You've got the cinematic game Out of This World, the sports game Sensei, and of course, you can't make a list like this without Monkey Island. So I'm with you.
Right.
This is it's a list that takes not a lot of risks, but also you can't really argue with anything on there.
No, it's not like you put like some horrible game on here that we can't stand. Like, a hideous game. All these games, I think, have merit. Even, like, Theme Park was at the back end of this. Even Theme Park's okay. So, that's good. We missed this one. I don't know if it's different in your list than it is mine. It's the old Outrun story. Outrun is being worked on. Now, I was reading about this. I believe I read that this is going to require an AGA 1200 with an O30. I believe that's, I read that.
Oh, Okay.
So,
okay.
But I mean, of course, well, in modern
age, looking at the gameplay footage here,
yeah,
that doesn't surprise me because this appears to be, if not arcade perfect, at least arcade close enough. It really looks nice.
Yeah, I mean, if you consider the, I want to give this guy credit here. If you consider what we've played,
it's
this is the reassembler here. And he's got a list here of what's on here. Yeah, it says here Amiga 1200 with an 030 and AGA. But it's got the Ferrari pastures, car handling, user controls, and track mode. It was into track mode for most of the video, which was nice. I mean, I'm glad. I was wondering. I'd heard about this project a while back, and I was wondering if it was still being worked on because I hadn't heard much about it. So when it popped up, I thought I'd grab it. We could talk about it. This is sort of the golden chalice of the Amiga. This and Doom. Like, can we get a version of this that's not crap? And so I'm pleased that someone's actually working on a version that hopefully is not crap.
Yeah, yeah. And that's going to do it for this week's Amiga News. Aaron, what do we have coming up next week on Amiga?
Let's find out, Booter. Oh, man. It's Public Domainia, Boat.
Public Domainia. And I believe that the game that we're going to be playing next week is, in fact, Air Taxi. Air Taxi, Aaron.
Air Taxi. I wonder if this is another one of the many ripoffs of Space Taxi. We've tried several now. Yeah, so that wouldn't surprise. Hey, I like Space Taxi, though. Although I loved Ugg, and everybody killed that. So there you go. It didn't make any top 10 lists, that's for sure.
That's true. That's true. Nobody likes Ugg but you and me. All right, guys. Thanks, as always, for listening. As always, we do record this show live on Twitch, twitch.tv/AmigosPodcast. You can also check us out on the podcasting. We have an audio-only version of this show. Just search for Amigos Podcast on Google. It will pop up. And we also record the show live, and we stream it on YouTube at the Amigos Podcast channel. All of those places, you can find us wherever you want.
And Twitch.
If you want to support our show, you can go to patreon.com/AmigosPodcast. Guys, thanks so much for listening. We will see you next week. And until then,
adios.
Amigos is made possible by contributions from listeners like you. Patreon supporters help choose the games we play, receive exclusive magnets, and get access to the Amigos Retro Gaming Discord server. Visit patreon.com/AmigosPodcast if you'd like to support the show and join our community.